Good morning, dear brothers and sisters in the Dharma. Today is September the 4th, right? The year 2011, and we are in the Deer Park Monastery in our day of mindfulness. This meditation hall has the name Ocean of Peace Meditation Hall. You don't believe it, but it is Thai who designed this meditation hall. He was in Vermont, state of Vermont. He noticed the barn was built a little bit like this, and he said that, well, an American meditation hall should look American. So he asked his friend Pritam Singh to help build a meditation hall in this form. This is the line and appearance. The form of this hall has a New England feature. It's very nice to be in this hall again, to be with you all. This is a happy moment. We are all still alive. And we can sit together and breathe together and smile together. I am a happy monk. And you are happy practitioners, whether you are monastic or lay practitioners. The practice offered by Buddha is to be fully alive, fully present, and to live every moment that is given us to live deeply. And the practice help improve the quality of our life. And you don't need money or fame or power to do that. We need only a little bit of mindfulness and concentration generated by the practice of mindful breathing, mindful walking, and so on. Mindfulness cannot be bought at the supermarket. We have to generate it by ourselves. And wherever there is mindfulness and concentration, there is understanding and compassion, and that make our life more pleasant, and we are happier. So everyone should know how to produce the energy of mindfulness and concentration. They will lead to understanding and love. When you love someone, you want him or her to be there for you, right? If he is too occupied, too busy, if she is too busy, she cannot be there for us. So when you love someone, what you can offer him or her is your being there, your presence. How can you love if you are not there? It's impossible to love if you are not there. And to be there is a practice. To be there truly with your body and your mind together. In order to be there, you need to practice mindful breathing, mindful walking, so that you bring your mind home to your body. And when your mind and body are together, you are there. And you offer yourself, you offer your presence to the person you love. And you look in his eyes and you say, "Darling, I'm here for you. I'm really here for you." And you are telling the truth because you are truly there. You don't think of the past. You don't think of the future. You are not get caught. You do not get caught in your projects. You do not get caught in your anger, your fear. You are free. You are there for him or for her. That is the most precious gift that you can make to the person you love. So according to the Buddha's teaching, the most precious gift you can make to the person you love is your true presence. And in order to be there, you should know how to bring your mind home to your body. And that can be done with mindful breathing, mindful walking. And you need only to breathe in and out mindfully for a few seconds. And you get rid of the past, you get rid of your future, you get rid of your preoccupations, and you are there. And you can pronounce, "Darling, I am here for you. This is my present. This is my gift." And your presence is fresh, loving, smiling. Each of us is born in the garden of humanity as a flower. A baby is always beautiful. A little child, a little boy, a little girl is always very beautiful. I like to contemplate a little boy, a little girl. They are always very beautiful. They are flowers in the garden of humanity. Look at a child. Her face is a real flower. Her eyes is a real flower. Look at little boy. His tiny hand is a real flower. His tiny foot is a real flower. And the child is beautiful when he is awake. A child is beautiful when he sleeps. And mothers and fathers, they enjoy looking at that flower. So each of us is born as a flower, beautiful, fresh, wonderful. But if we don't know how to live, how to practice, we become less beautiful. If we cry too much, and then our eyes are no longer limpid, clear. If we worry too much, and then we lose our beauty, our freshness. If we get angry, we don't look beautiful anymore. That is why the practice of the Buddha can help us preserve our freshness, our beauty, our flowerness. The practice helps us not to lose our flowerness. And as a flower, we have something to offer to the person we love. "Darling, here I am, fresh as a flower. This is for you. That's the most precious gift. You might buy something from the market, very expensive. But that gift cannot be compared with your presence. So in order to be a true lover, you have to take care of yourself, to preserve your flowerness, your freshness. And the Buddha knows how to do that. And his friends, his disciples know how to do that. They know how to sit, how to walk, how to breathe, how to restore their flowerness and their beauty. And this is a Buddhist practice. Meditation is that. I know a young man of 11 years old. He's not happy because his father is too busy. His father is a very successful businessman. He's very rich. But he has no time for himself. He has no time for his wife and his son. Well, there are times when he is home. But his mind is not with him. His mind is always with his business. He's caught in his computer. He's not free. So there are times when his father is home, but he's not truly home. His mind is caught in how to have more success in the enterprise, in the business. And he's interested too much in the value of the stock market. And he does not have the time to breathe, to walk, to restore his freshness, and to offer his present to his wife and his little boy. And the little boy suffer, the young man suffer, because he thinks that he has a father, but it looks like he does not have a father, because the father is always busy. His father is not available to him. He's not there for him. So that morning, his father remembered that the next day is the birthday of his boy, his little boy, his son. So he asked, he said, "My son, tomorrow will be your birthday, right? What do you want? I will buy it for you." He did not think that his presence is the most important gift. So he was thinking of buying something. But the young man did not feel that he needs anything. He knows that his father can afford to buy anything he wants, but he doesn't want anything. He has plenty of toys. He has everything. What he needs is his father, but his father is too busy. So finally he said, "Daddy, what I want is you." So if his father has come to a day of mindfulness in Deer Park, he would know what to do. But he has not come to Deer Park. He did not know how to breathe, to smile, to make himself available. If he had gone to Deer Park and learned how to walk mindfully and breathe mindfully, he would know exactly what to do. It would take him only a few seconds to breathe in and to bring his mind home to his body. And he will be fully present in the here and the now. It takes only 3 seconds to breathe in mindfully. That's not much. Or if he knows walking meditation, like we did this morning, only 1 or 2 steps are enough to bring our mind home to our body, and we are fully present in the here and the now. And it will take him 3-5 seconds to bring his mind home to his body. And when he is truly there, he needs only to look at his son and smile and say, "My son, darling, I'm here for you." It's easy. So each of us has to learn. The person we love is there, alive. And we want to offer him or her something. Because when you love someone, you always want to offer him or her something. And in the Buddhist practice, you know that the most precious thing you can offer him or her is your true presence. And that is why in Deer Park we have the practice of the first mantra. "Darling, I'm here for you." But before you pronounce that mantra, you have to make sure that you are truly there. Otherwise, you are not telling the truth. There is a French philosopher. His name is Descartes. He said, "I think, therefore I am. I'm not sure that is the truth." Because when you think too much, you are lost in your thinking. You are carried away by your thinking, and you are not truly there. So when you breathe in, don't think anymore. "I think, therefore I'm not there." When you breathe in, stop the thinking. Just become aware of your in-breath. It's very pleasant to breathe in. And when you breathe out, you smile. When you breathe in, mindfully, you know that you are alive. And breathing in, you can restore your flowerness. You become a flower again for yourself, for him, and for her. So breathing in, you become a flower again. Breathing out, you smile as a flower. Relax. And you say, "Darling, I'm here for you." And that person may be our father, our mother, our brother, our sister, our uncle, our partner. And this is a mantra that everyone should learn by heart. And as a lover, we have to practice the first mantra. "I am here for you." And this is a practice to be here. You have to stop the thinking. you have to become a flower again, fresh, beautiful. If you have lost some of your flowerness, practice breathing like that, walking like that for a few days, and you will recover, restore your flowerness. And when you grow old, 80, 90, you can still be a flower. With the practice, you can stay fresh, pleasant, peaceful. So the practice of Buddhist meditation helps us to preserve our freshness, our beauty, our flowerness. I was in China, mainland China, and I taught the children how to practice the first mantra. And they wrote it down in Chinese. They learned by heart. They hung it on their room, and they practiced with their father, their mother, their brother. And the mantra we practice doesn't have to be in Sanskrit or Tibetan. You can practice it in English or French or Spanish. It's easy, darling, I'm here for you. Remember, you have to be there, otherwise you are not telling the truth. And I'd like to transmit to you another mantra today, which is also very effective mantra. When you love someone, you should know at least these two mantras. I'm here for you, and the second one is, darling, I know you are there for me. I'm so happy. But you can only practice the second mantra when you are truly there. When you are there, truly there, you are concentrated, you are mindful. That is why you know that your beloved one is there for you, still alive. So the first mantra is to be there, to produce our true presence. And the second mantra is to acknowledge, to recognize the presence of your beloved one. Darling, I know you are there, alive for me. And this is a condition of happiness. Imagine she's no longer there. He is no longer there. You will cry. You will be caught by despair. But he is still alive. She is still alive there for you. That is why, as a lover, you have to recognize his presence, her presence, as something very valuable, very precious to you, for you. And this mantra can be practiced several times a day. Even when he is still in the office, you can send him an email. You say, darling, I know you are there. I'm so happy. And you are happy when you practice the mantra, and he is happy when he hears the mantra. Happiness is easy. It's possible. In just a few seconds, you can produce, you can generate the energy of joy and happiness. Imagine you go to school. And when you go home, your mother is not there. There is no dinner. The house is cold, but you suffer. But mother is always there. So when you come back from school, you can breathe in and become fully present. And you recognize that your mother, the fact that your mother is there in the house. So you can practice the second mantra. Mother, mommy, I know you are there. I'm very happy. It's very simple. You suffer, you are not happy because you are not mindful. If you are mindful, you know that there's so many things that can make you happy right here and right now. Don't wait until the other person dies in order to regret. The other person is still alive. We have to cherish, to treasure his or her presence. And one of the things that we can do is to practice the second mantra. Darling, I know you are there. I'm so happy. That is love. And the practice is not difficult. And it can bring joy and happiness right away. Center like Deer Park, we practice listening to the bell. Every time we hear the bell, we stop our thinking. Whether we are monastic or lay practitioner, every time we hear the bell, we stop the thinking. And we don't make any effort to stop the thinking. We just stop it. It has become a habit. A good habit. When you hear the little sound announcing that a full sound is going to be heard, you naturally stop your thinking and begin to breathe in mindfully. If you stay with us a few days, you will get that kind of habit. Because everyone living in the community, when hearing the sound of bell, naturally stop the thinking and go back to the present moment with mindful breathing and become fully present, fully alive in the here and the now. And we enjoy breathing in, we enjoy breathing out. Very simple practice. If you want, you can get a bell, the kind of bell that we used this morning during work meditation, a mini bell. And every family may buy a small bell with a little cushion. And you have to learn how to invite the bell to sound. We don't say hitting the bell or striking the bell. We say invite the bell to sound. And in retreats of mindfulness, the children always learn how to be a bell master. He or she should know how to breathe and how to invite the bell to sound for everyone to breathe. I always recommend that to the children that they should arrange so that in their home there is a room to make a place to serve as a place of sitting and breathing, like a small meditation hall. And you don't need furniture, a lot of furniture. You need a few cushions. If the family has three people, and then we need three cushions. And they are very cute cushions for children, very beautiful. And in that tiny meditation hall, you need a few cushions to sit down. And you need a bell, that's all. If you like, you can have a pot of flower. But a few cushions and a little bell, that's good enough. Be very, very nice if every morning before going to school, you go to that room, you sit down, you invite the bell to sound three times. And after each sound, you breathe in and breathe out three times. I breathe in and I enjoy breathing in. I breathe out, I enjoy breathing out. I breathe in, I become a flower again. I breathe out, I feel fresh. And three sounds of the bell give you an opportunity to breathe in and out nine times. And you have plenty of sense to restore your flowerness. And your parents may join you in breathing. And after that, you go off to school and they go to work. It's a very beautiful way to start your day. You start your day by the practice of mindful breathing with the bell. You become fresh to begin your day. You don't need to wish, have a good day. You make the day good by the practice. And every night before you go to sleep, it's nice to go to that room, your meditation hall. The meditation room, and sit down and breathe. And you invite your mom, your dad to come and sit and breathe with you, I'm sure they will do it. And every time you get angry, you get upset, don't say anything, don't do anything. You remember that there's a place for you to go and restore yourself. Because you are not fresh, beautiful, and happy when you are angry or you get upset. So from now on, every time you get upset, you get angry, don't allow yourself to be carried away by your anger, by your upset. You decide to go to your tiny meditation hall and sit down to restore yourself. You sit down and you bow to the bell as a friend. And you hold the bell up. And you breathe in and out with the sound of the bell. And to restore yourself. I'm sure that after three sounds of the bell, nine times of breathing in and out, you feel better. Your anger will be transformed. And when your mother hear the sound of the bell, she may be cooking in the kitchen. But when she hear the bell, she know that you are there practicing. So she will stop cutting the carrot or peeling the onion. She will breathe with you. That's very beautiful. And when someone in the family is upset, is angry, you yourself, you are not upset, you are not angry. But you want to help him or her to restore. That is why you go to the meditation hall and you bow to the bell and you breathe and you invite the bell. That will help. Because everybody in the home, in the house know that you are doing that for the whole family. So when the atmosphere of the family is tense, not pleasant, you can restore the peace. And the joy by seeking help from the bell, seeking help from the practice. And I think in the 21st century, every civilized home should have a room like that and a bell. Because you have a room for the guests, a room to store the toys. You have a room to eat, a place to cook. We should have a room in order to restore our flowerness and our happiness. So that room is like a practice center. It's like Deer Park. And when you got into that room and sit down, nobody can call you, can scold you anymore, can reproach you anymore. When you got into that room, that is the territory of the Buddha, of spirituality. And you are there to restore yourself, and no one will disturb you. So when the children hear the little bell, they will stand up and bow and go out and play outside. Maybe a monk can teach you how to invite the bell. Okay, stand up. The kids only. The kids only. You go out this way, or the other way. And we are down, we can stand up and stretch before we sit down again. Spirituality. He's a British monk. He's a musician, a scientist. he and his girlfriend became ordained as a monk or a nun at the same time. And Sister Hiang Yam, Sister Dedication is on also here for the first time in Deer Park. They have practiced as novices 3 years, and they have been ordained, fully ordained as monk and nun. They are helping with the wake up movement, organizing so that the young people everywhere can enjoy the practice. And our young monks and nuns have gone to many universities in Europe and talk to the young people about how to enjoy the practice. The wake up movement. We do not have set up a special time for meditation every day, because meditation can be done whenever we are at any time, at any place. This morning we said that from your parking lot to the workplace, you can enjoy the practice of mindful breathing and mindful walking. Every breath bring us home to the here and now, every step also. And we can enjoy every step. That is already meditation. We don't have to set a time outside in order to do meditation. When you take a shower, the time of taking a shower can be a time for meditation. Bring your mind back to your body. Become aware of your body, transmitted by your parents, your ancestors. Be with your body. Restore your flowerness and stop the thinking. Just enjoy the shower. And taking the shower in such a way that happiness and freedom are possible. You are not caught by your anger, your fear, your worries. You are not thinking of your projects. You are free and you enjoy taking your shower. That is meditation. When you brush your teeth, take time to enjoy brushing your teeth. That time is the time for meditation. Do not think. Stop the thinking. You feel the water, you feel your body. You are aware of your hand, of the movement of your hand. You enjoy brushing your teeth. You brush, you may have just a few minutes to brush your teeth. But it is possible to produce the energy of mindfulness and peace and joy during the time of tooth brushing. Don't try to do it quickly in order to finish with it. Enjoy. You have the water, you have the dental cream, you have the brush. You can enjoy. When I brush my teeth, I'm aware that at this age, I still have some teeth to brush. That alone can make me happy already. So the time you brush your teeth, that's the time for meditation. And when you eat an orange, you drink a cup of water, when you have your lunch, there's time for meditation. Eat your lunch in such a way that freedom and joy become possible. Be free from your worries, from your thinking, from your anger. The time is for you to enjoy your lunch. You breathe in and you become fully present in the here and the now. And every morsel of food that you chew and you swallow, that should be an opportunity for you to be there. And the food comes from the cosmos. A piece of bread, a piece of vegetable contains the whole cosmos in it. There is the sunshine, the rain, the earth, time, space, everything is in the piece of bread. And when you hold a piece of bread in your hand and breathe, you can get that insight. You can see that the piece of bread is an ambassador from the cosmos to you, coming to you and nourish you. In the Christian tradition, there is the celebration of the Eucharist. And the piece of bread that you hold and put into your mouth is the body of Jesus. So you get a communion with Him through the bread, because the bread is Jesus. Jesus is not someone, something that is outside of the bread. Jesus is the bread. And with mindfulness and concentration, you get in touch with Jesus. In Buddhism, we don't say that, but we say the piece of bread in your hand is the body of the cosmos. And when you see the sunshine, the cloud, the rain, the earth, everything in the piece of bread, you have seen the bread. Otherwise, the bread is not real. It's a piece of ghost. It's not real. So a few seconds of mindfulness help you to see the bread as it is. The body of the cosmos. Everything is in there. And with that, you put it into your mouth and you chew, and you get in touch with the whole cosmos. You don't have to think. That is not thinking. There's awareness. There's getting in touch. So there is a feeling, there is insight, but there is no thinking. No thinking is the secret. And when you are chewing, when you chew the piece of bread, the morsel of bread, you are mindful of what you chew. You only chew the bread. You don't chew your projects. Your anger is not healthy to chew and swallow your anger, your projects. Just chew the bread. And become a very tasty, and Yes, Sarah. So we can eat every morsel of our lunch in that way. And from time to time, we stop, eat, chewing, and we look around, and we recognize a brother in the Dharma sitting there, a sister in the Dharma sitting there. It's joy, it's a great joy to be able to sit and share lunch with a community of practice. And you produce the energy of brotherhood, sisterhood, and joy and peace. So eating lunch like that, not only you get the nourishment for your body, but for your mind, for your consciousness. That's called mindful eating. And during the time of the Buddha, the monks sit with the Buddha and eat that way. Enjoy together with their lunch, their brotherhood, their sisterhood. So today, we'll do that together. We should sit in groups and we display our sandwich, our bottle of water, and we breathe in and out. And as we hold the sandwich, the bread, we look at it for a few seconds. We know this is the body of the cosmos. It's wonderful to have something to eat. While there are many millions of children are hungry. And eating like that can generate the energy of compassion. And we know what to do and what not to do in order to help the world suffer less. We eat and consume in such a way that can preserve our compassion. Because without compassion, a person cannot be a happy person. He or she cannot relate to other living beings if she does not have any compassion in her. So eating is a way to nourish not only our body, but our compassion, our happiness. The Buddha said that there are four kinds of food, four kinds of nutrients. The first one is edible food. And he recommends us to eat in such a way that can preserve compassion in our heart if we want to be a happy person. He told the story of a young couple who want to flee the country and to go to another, to settle in another country. And they brought with them their little boy. This story must have been told to the Buddha by the couple. They did not calculate well enough. That is why half the way through the desert, they run out of food. Because in order to go to the other country, they have to cross a desert. But halfway, they run out of food. And they realize that three of them will die in the desert. And after much thinking, they made a terrible decision to kill the little boy and eat his flesh in order for the couple to survive. Otherwise, three of them will die. The story is told in a sutra called the Sutra on the Son's Flesh. It's a real story. So after having killed the little boy, each of them ate a piece of that flesh to survive and kept the rest on their shoulder to dry on the sun, under the sun. And every day they just ate one morsel from one mouthful of that flesh. And every day after having eaten a piece of that flesh, they beat their chests, they pull their hair, they cry, "Where is our beloved little son?" They suffer very much. But finally, they got out of the desert and was welcomed to as refugees in the other country. Before they decided to kill the little boy, they said, "Well, with God's blessing, we may have another child. But if we don't do that, and then all three of us will die." And the Buddha must have heard the story from a refugee. And after having told the story to the monks, he asked them, "Dear friends, do you think that the couple enjoy eating the flesh of their son?" And the monk said, "No, teacher, it's impossible to enjoy eating the flesh of your own son." And the Buddha said, "Dear friends, let us eat in such a way that can preserve the compassion in our heart. Otherwise, we'll be eating the flesh of our own son and daughter." UNESCO has reported that every day 40,000 children die of the lack of nutrition. 40,000 every day. And in overdeveloped countries, we eat a lot of meat and we drink a lot of alcohol. In order to produce a piece of meat, we have to use a lot of grain. And that amount of grain can be used to feed the children and adults who are dying. And the report from the United Nations tell us that if we can reduce the eating of meat by 50%, we can already change the situation in the world. Reducing just 50% of the consumption of meat, to reduce the production and the consumption of meat by 50%. That is what we can do. In my country, many Buddhists, most of the Buddhists eat vegetarian 10 days a month. That's their tradition. There are those who eat vegetarian the whole month, but the majority would eat 10 days of vegetarian food. And I urged them to add 5 more days in order to meet the request of the United Nations. Because if we can reduce the consumption of meat by 50%, that can already help a lot. Not only we can save children from dying, but we can save the planet. Because the meat industry destroys a lot of forest and pollute a lot. Produce a lot of CO2. And to go vegetarian, at least 50% is the most effective way to save the planet. And that's not too difficult. And the monks and the nuns in Deer Park, they know how to cook delicious vegetarian dishes. And we get a lot of joy eating like that, because we know that eating like that, we can preserve our compassion, we can help save our planet. We are not eating the flesh of our children and grandchildren. And that is what the Buddha recommended. Mindful eating. Practicing mindful eating, we can save many lives. And we can save our planet. Please make research about that. Informations are available on that matter. The second source of nutriment spoken by the Buddha is sensory impressions. And we absorb this kind of food not by the way of the mouth, but by the way of the eyes, ear, nose, body, and mind. When we watch television, we consume. When we read a magazine, we consume. When we listen to the music, we consume. We should be aware that many of the items that we consume with the eyes, with the ear, with the body, with our mind can be very toxic. A television program, an article may be full of hate, anger, violence. And if we allow our children to consume these items, the toxin go into their body and their consciousness. Even conversation can be sometimes very toxic. You sit there and you listen to him or to her. The conversation is full of hate and violence. And after you have listened 1 hour, you feel paralyzed because you have consumed so much hate, so much violence from the conversation. So conversation is consumption. Reading an article can also bring a lot of poison into our body and mind, hate, craving, despair. That is why we should learn how to consume mindfully, not to consume items that can bring violence, fear, anger, despair to us. We get a depression very soon if we allow ourselves to consume images, sounds, thought like that. The thinking can be sometimes very toxic. And that is the second source of nutriment called sensorial impressions. And the Buddha used an image to illustrate that kind of food. He used the image of a cow that has skin disease. The cow no longer has skin. So when the cow lay down on the ground, tiny creatures from the ground will come up and begin to suck the blood of the cow, because the cow has no longer any skin to protect her. And when the cow approaches a wall, an ancient wall or a tree, small creatures living in the bark of the tree or in the ancient wall will fly and fix themselves on the body of the cow and begin to suck the blood. And if we bring the cow into the water, the tiny animals living in the water will come, because they hear, they sense, they feel the blood. So if we are not mindful, we are like a cow without skin. And what we see, what we hear, what we touch will penetrate into our body and consciousness and bring the toxins into our body, our consciousness, and destroy us. That is why let us be careful when we read books, when we consume music, when we listen to conversation, when we watch television, because many of the items are full of poisons, craving, anger, fear, despair. And that's what we consume every day. We have to protect ourselves. We have to protect our children by the practice of mindful consumption. That is the object of practice of the fifth mindfulness training, mindful consumption, in terms of edible food, in terms of sensorial impressions. So the family should sit down and discuss a strategy of consumption. Let us not consume the items that contain toxins. Let us talk to our children and tell them that it is not sane, healthy to consume such or such items in television, in books, in magazines, in conversation, and so on. We have to protect ourselves, and we have to protect our children, our society. And if we are legislators, we should discuss with our colleagues about how to help stop the production of toxic items, because they want to get rich. They want to sell things, and they produce very toxic things for us to consume. Even the mass media. When I visited India last time, the Times of India, which is a main newspaper there, asked me to be the guest editor of the newspaper on the day of commemoration of Mahatma Gandhi. So I accepted and I came and we talked. We had a meeting of all the editors. And that morning there was news that there was terrorist attack, bombing. And the news arrived during our meeting. I was a guest editor and there was 15 other editors sitting with me around the table. And they asked, "Dear Thay, what do you do in the morning when there are bad news like that coming in? Bombs rock a city and kill many people. Terrorism, bomb attack. This is not a easy question to answer. So I had to practice mindful breathing. And finally I said that we should report about what has happened today. But let us report in such a way that can help people to understand why there is so much anger and violence. There are many ways of reporting on the same event. You can report in such a way that make people angry, fearful, despair. And you can report the truth in a way that can help people to understand, to have compassion. It depends on you, journalist. So if you are in a mass media, you might like to exercise your vocation in such a way that can promote more understanding and compassion. And you should not write articles that make people despair and angry. And that is why when we consume a news bulletin, we can get despair, anger, hate, and violence. And mindfulness of consumption help us to protect ourselves from despair, from anger, from fear, from anger. And if the cow has skin, and then she can protect herself from being invaded by many insects and other many organisms. And that's what the Buddha said concerning the second item, the second source of nutriment. The third kind of food is called volition, your aspiration, your desire, your deepest kind of desire. In every one of us, there is a deep desire, a deep aspiration. And that makes us alive, active. If we don't want anything, if we don't have any aspiration, if we do not have any desire, we have no energy. So volition is a source of nutriment. The Buddha is very alive very active because he has the aspiration, the desire to help people. So that desire is wholesome. It's a good kind of food. If you are motivated by the desire to help people, to save the planet, to protect life, but you have a good food as a volition, as a good desire. But if you have desire to revenge, to punish, like the terrorists, they are very alive, they are very active, because they have a deep desire to punish, to revenge. That is not a good kind of nutriment. So we should look into ourselves to recognize, to identify the deepest desire in us, the source of energy that can make us active and alive. If our deepest desire is to run after fame, wealth, sensual pleasure, and power, that may bring us a lot of suffering. But if we are motivated by the wholesome desire to serve, to protect, to help, to make the happiness of other people, to help them suffer less, that will make us happy, and that will make the people in the world happy. So everyone has to look back to see and to identify our deepest desire, our deepest aspiration. That is the third source of nutriment. And the fourth kind of nutriment talked about by Buddha is collective consciousness. If you find yourself living in a neighborhood where people are full of hate and anger and fear, you are consuming the collective energy of fear, anger, and despair. That's very toxic. You'll be like them after a few weeks, a few months. So it's not very wise to live in an environment full of hate, full of fear and anger. Your children will get that toxin very quickly. And the moment when you realize that you are consuming a lot of collective energy of hate, fear, and anger, you know that it's harmful. You have to pull out as soon as possible. You have to go to a place where there is a better collective energy of consciousness, a place where people can generate the energy of peace, mindfulness, calm, brotherhood, sisterhood, that will be nourishing. And that is why to build a community of mindful living where people can generate joy and happiness and brotherhood, sisterhood is a very beautiful thing to do. So that you can take refuge in that environment. For your children, for yourself. And when you are strong enough, you can go back to the other environment and help transform. But if you are not strong enough and continue to be in that neighborhood, you'll be destroyed by the collective energy of hate, fear, anger, and despair. And we know that if there is violence, killing, that is because the people have got too much of that kind in the daily life. The killing in schools, is one of the symptoms. We pull out for the moment, and when we are strong enough, we can come back in force as a Sangha in order to help transform. And that is the fourth kind of nutriment, collective consciousness. So when we come to a retreat center like Deer Park and sit down, and breathe in and out, and release the tension, and reduce the pain in the body, and allow the energy of compassion to arise, we are generating together a very wholesome collective energy that will be nourishing and healing for everyone. And that is done by a group of people, not one person. And this morning when we sit down during work and meditation with the children sitting quietly, we feel the energy of peace, brotherhood, sisterhood. And that is very nourishing. That cannot be produced by one person, even a teacher, a good teacher. That collective energy should be a product of a Sangha. Since every one of us know how to breathe in and out and release the tension. Since every one of us is aware that to be there as a Sangha, to get in touch with the wonders of life in ourselves and around, that is why we can produce that kind of wholesome energy that is nourishing and healing for us and for our children. And we can do like this morning, walking like that, sitting like that, breathing like that. And it can produce the kind of energy that the world needs, mindfulness. Aliveness, brotherhood, sisterhood, and peace. This is something we can do. And that, therefore, in the Buddhist tradition, we know that a good practitioner always thinks of building a community of practice in their own neighborhood. So that we can meet together, we can walk together, we can sit together, we can produce together the wholesome energy that we and our children need. And if we have in the group a few who are long-term practitioners, who know how to do it, well, we are lucky. Because everyone will learn to do the same thing. And every step, every breath can help generate the collective energy of peace, mindfulness, and joy. And joy and happiness is possible in the here and the now without the need of having a lot of money and go and buy. Because many people are very rich, they buy a lot of things, but they are still unhappy. So the practice can bring peace, happiness, and joy, and brotherhood. And we hope that in the future, our children will have a chance to learn it from their school. We are arranging so that we can train groups of school teachers who will know how to do these kind of things. Breathing, walking, sitting, releasing tension, creating feeling of joy and peace. using loving speech and deep listening to restore communication and reconcile. These things can be offered as a non-sectarian practice, and that can be taught in school at every level. And many of our brothers and sisters here have organized a meeting and session of practice for school teachers. And we are very enthusiastic school teachers in doing so. Our European Institute of Applied Buddhism in Germany has already trained the first group of school teachers. And we are organizing a week of learning and practice for school teachers in many countries, including Thailand, Vietnam, and so on. So if you are parents or school teachers, please join us and help our children to learn and to practice that. And we don't have to be a Buddhist in order to learn and practice, because you don't need to be a Buddhist in order to breathe in and out. You don't need to be a Buddhist in order to smile and to look at other people with compassion. So let us, when we hear the bell announcing lunch time, observe our silence, enjoy our breathing, and stand in line to receive our food, and then sit down and enjoy mindful eating. And we need the insight. Mindfulness and concentration bring the insight that this breath is the body of the cosmos.